You're
Well,
gonna need
tonight's
this.
going to be a revisit of last week, so you're welcome to interrupt anywhere along the line.
So we're gonna read some stuff to you guys, and if you have any questions, just jump on in there and ask those questions, okay?
Okay.
Okie dokie. Okay. Once upon a time before beginnings, and long before endings, all personal and universal knowledge of abiding enhanced you. And experiencing abiding is available to you today. In fact, abiding and passing on this ancient knowledge and way of life gives meaning and purpose to your coming alive. And its dissemination and application is life's finest achievement, and sentience is your guide. Long ago and far, far away, and even in distant lands on earth, not so far away, there were places where people lived and believed all things are divine and physical is merely an illuminated form of spiritual, and all individuals are divine in their own authority, and no one has authority over any other person. Children were made aware of the divine come alive gifts of a body, self, and life, which enabled them to come alive and emprise or regenerate those gifts as they truly desired them to be. All children were also given a muse symbol, or God as an inspiration, similar to a vision quest today, to guide and inspire them. And because these people lived long and prospered in living their own authority, they were known as the abiding ones. Many centuries later, the ways of these ancient people were memoried and briefly brought to life again, as described in Judges 21, verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. But unfortunately, this quickly deteriorated in Israel to be replaced by the authority of God. But this ancient life as an abiding being is still available to you today should you choose to live long and prosper by your own authority.
Misty?
Yeah?
What is this Judges 21 to 25 about?
Bible. That's the Bible.
Ah, okay.
Living your mortal loner body self in life today leaves you living and dying at the level of animals. But unfortunately, fortunately, you are a privileged being who can regenerate your loner body self and life to abiding and live long and prosper by your own authority again. Your life today is not really about spiritualizing the physical world, discovering God or becoming one with God, nor is it about bringing God alive in the worldly universe today. For the universe is so planetary that it is as it is and simultaneously is as you and all others are as well. In this, you can continue living your perishable body, self, and life that was created for you as a come-alive gift, and struggle eternally to become who you truly desire being. Or, since your created self in life enables you to participate in the world around you, and know and experience yourself in life, you can regenerate or rebirth yourself as you truly desire. Isn't that grand? Do not listen to God's deceivers and despoilers. Are you willing to regenerate your loner body self in life to abiding to be and live as an abiding being? You are abiding, but you don't seem interested in being and living your personal authority as an abiding being. Why do you suppose that is? Is it possible you would rather live your hopes and dreams and intentions of becoming abiding than actually live as an abiding being today? And maybe discover you are not as extraordinary as you hope and dream. Or just find you are not all wise and as happy as you expected, nor as self-realized. Is it possible that nothing can hold up to your expectations? Does it seem wiser to rely on your dreams and intentions than on knowing the truth of yourself? Don't bet on it. You, as an abiding being, are far greater and more fulfilling and satisfying than you can even imagine. Living as an abiding being is not as though you are to knock on a door and it will be opened to you. It is that the whole world has been knocking to be let in. But, unfortunately, until now, you have held the world out as a way to focus on self-discovery and spiritual awareness, and even on self-realization. And in that, you have forsaken your abiding way of living by your own authority as an abiding being. Actually, like Esau, you sold your abiding birthright for a mess of pottage, which is a measure of feelings and emotions.
It should have been mixture, by the way.
A mixture of pottage?
Yeah.
Okay. Letting the world in is not a matter of giving to others or doing for others. It is letting the world serve you. Letting the world into your life begins by living your eternal emprise and answering each knock at the door. Of course, if you are willing to let the world in to serve you, then you should also create the serving world you truly desire and decide how you are to be served. Or does that seem like too much trouble? Or too much to expect of you? Is it possible you are struggling to cope with the world simply because you won't answer the door and let the world you desire into the world around you? Your abiding self in life is the world you truly desire. You have imprisoned yourself in a loner personal self and world that is not even you or yours, and have refused to come out or let the world in. Why do you suppose that is? The following is a manuscript first discovered in the 1880s that was used to instruct children and young adults in the ways of abiding. It was also given to those who came to abiding communities seeking knowledge. This translation is made to accommodate the form and structure of today's language, because a direct word-for-word translation of abiding would not make much sense to you today. Abiding beliefs, principles, and ways. The concept of the authority of man arose in abiding communities because we had no gods to despoil us. We honor abiding individuals who were exalted and revered as supremely good or great. Of course, this was an error or way of life that existed centuries ago. The authority of man does not mean the authority of some men. It is about the authority of every man and woman. For all people are deities in their life. Therefore, to truly understand and live the authority of man as an abiding being, you must realize all of your doings. For believe it or not, as you act and the universe reacts to faithfully transfigure your every action, the universe is living every aspect of yourself and life as you do it. Therefore, if you want to continue being awarefully and abidingly alive as you desire, you must live as the abiding being you truly desire being today, so the universe can live with you. And memory that particular abiding being for you to download in the future, and the universe gives that to you. God does not. No matter what you are doing, you are only doing your beliefs. God and holiness does not exist as a fundamental nature of the universe or of each person. So, who or what are you? and why have you come alive? Do you know? It is frequently said that we have grown to be abiding because of our universal ability to reason properly and clearly, and that is true. But that isn't all. We are abiding because of imaginative minding, which is the power to conceive imaginatively or see and know by simultaneously using more than one sense, such as seeing sound or hearing space. Imaginative minding gives us the power to know life and show that as abiding beings, we are much, much more than what it seems we are. And so are you. More than what we previously sensed ourselves down to be. Imaginative minding is expensive and extensive minding without, not within. To those of you who are seeking, we offer you the following vision. A student came to his abiding teacher with an empty cup, asking that the wise man give him just a little of his great abiding wisdom, so the student could share that with all whom he met in life. But why have you come with an empty cup? The teacher asked. So you can fill it up as it pleases you, the student replied. I want to show you that I am prepared, and I have emptied myself of false beliefs. And if I fill your cup, to whom will you then offer a drink of my abiding wisdom? Must they also have an empty cup? Of course, for I cannot help those who are filled with their own false beliefs. They must prepare themselves as I have done for years before approaching you. Take your cup and fill it at the cesspool over there, the teacher said, pointing to a pond of putrid water. The student didn't want to dirty his cup, and he was afraid his teacher would ask him to drink the foul water as a ceremony or test, or an initiation, which didn't seem too pleasant, but he was willing to endure almost any trial or indignity to have this abiding wisdom. The student rushed to the cesspool, and searching carefully, filled his cup with the worst water he could find, thinking that would impress his teacher with great trust and sincerity. Hurrying back to his teacher, the student fell upon his knees and held out his cup so his teacher could see the putrid water. Then, slowly, without flinching, he raised the cup to his lips to drink. Wait, the teacher said quietly, yet forcefully. Hold your cup out to me, he commanded. As the student held the cup forward, the teacher picked up a large pitcher next to him and began pouring the contents into the student's cup, which immediately overflowed, soaked his sleeves, and spilled on the ground. After many moments of this, the teacher, having poured the last drop from his pitcher, commanded the student to drink. And the student, certain he was being tested, probably with a nasty solution, or maybe it's hallucinogenic, slowly drank from his cup and found, surprisingly, he was drinking the sweetest, most refreshing liquid he had ever tasted. Do not limit your abiding wisdom to one cupful, the teacher said quietly, for as long as you hold out your mind, I will flood you with all I have, until, like this cup, your abiding self overflows completely and offers whatever you truly desire. What is your image of the universe and of yourself, and what is your role in that universe? Whatever your images are, if they do not inspire you and directly enhance every aspect of your daily life and activity, those images will painfully discontent you and quickly destroy the self and life you truly desire. The rest of the document is fragmented and unreadable, so we will continue describing the abiding way as we were taught. In those times and places, since there were no clocks, people observed changes and inferred time, and lived their lives by inferred time. Even today, though you live 80 clock years, your bodies and lives infer time of life is far different than 80 years. And in the past, though people lived only 30 to 40 years, since changes occurred more slowly then, their inferred time of life was not only greater than 40 years, it was longer than your 80 years of life today. Obviously, lifespans are getting shorter and shorter, not longer. Abiding ones are also able to stop or extend inferred time for each event or occasion. This is known as nonce time. Life created your abiding self as a vast, almost universal self, and created the universe as a consistent and reliable environment to be alive in. However, in bonding to your parents and family and your loner body, self, and life, you forsake the vast self you truly desire and want to be. And though you seldom realize it, your constant struggle with and against forsaking your vast self for a loner DNA body self and life is actually the major source of the problems and conflicts in your body and life today. So let's discuss DNA for a moment. DNA was first discovered in 1859, but no one knew what it was or what to do with it until 1944, and didn't begin understanding it until 1953, when Crick and Watson revealed the double helix nature and structure of DNA. And now we know a few things about DNA. Not much, but a little. Your loner body is an outpicturing today of all the DNA ancestors of that body. But those are ancestors of your parents' bodies and have nothing to do with you. But having bonded to your family and body, and more importantly, to your body's feelings and emotions and ways, you have forsaken your vast self. And since your beliefs, thoughts, ways, and concepts, and especially your brain, all belong to your parents, you can't even think or act yourself out of the box of your loner body self and life. And any vast abiding self you think of is of your loner body self, which is an image of your parents, not of you, but all is not lost. You, as a vast abiding self, were given these loner come alive gifts, so you could come alive in this environment to live as you truly desire, and desire being alive eternally. So now, we must consider DNA more closely. As your body portrays its DNA ancestors, or the ancestors of your parents' body's ancestors, the DNA of that body reads like a barcode to tell you of those ancestors, and especially of the particular ancestors your parents have enlivened and passed on to you. For the pattern of the ancestors they have enlivened is, unfortunately, the self you sense yourself being today. But that's not really you. And you can change that loner body self to be the vast abiding self you truly desire. So let's look at that. What is your greatest desire in life today? Would you say it is to awarefully live your vast self today and eternally, or abidingly? Then let's take a closer look at this. The cells of your body constantly die and fall away to be replaced by stem cells, which are programmed according to the beliefs and actions of your loner body self and life. What if you reprogrammed those new stem cells to be vast self cells before they are individualized as heart, liver, arm, etc. cells? Wouldn't that change the enlivened ancestors of your DNA body to be and portray your vast self? And wouldn't that change the enlivened self to reveal and express your vast self? And wouldn't you be aware of that and experience your vast self? From this point, I will always refer to your vast abiding self, vast self, to show that in this, you are beginning to be and live today as a vast self. Odd as it may seem, you cannot change yourself or your behaviors from loner to vast. But you can change your body, and that changes yourself and life. You change your body by changing your enlivened DNA, which changes your stem cells, which changes your body and enlivened self and life from loner to vast, to be and live today. In this, you stop being and living as a mortal loner being speaking of the vast self you want and hope to become, and begin being and living your vast self today. Are you willing to accept that the universe only reacts, that it reacts to your actions and even to its own reactions? And the reactions always and only portray the original action from a different perspective. If not, show me any intentionality or judgment in that universe. Actually, the universe always prepares the way for you as a loner being or vast being. In reacting to its own reactions, the universe presents a random, meaning without intention, event which you sense and put into memories, IES, which later, maybe only a millisecond later, you recall that random event from memories and reassemble or remember it into the particular and personal event you desire, to live as a loner you or a vast you. If you understand that the universe only reacts and always reacts to your actions, then the universe you live in today only portrays your actions, and there is no judgment of you in that. Unless, of course, you judge, and then you action these judgments, then the universe is only portraying your own judgments. Let's now use this understanding to demonstrate how to regenerate your loner body self to be a particularization of the vast abiding self you truly desire. If you action only those things that you would willingly be and do and live forever and have others do eternally to you, or if you only action the actions you are truly proud of, the universe will react to those eternal proud actions, which will reprogram each and every stem cell from your parents' loner body cells to your vast self body cells for you to be and live. In this, you change your enlivened DNA and self to be as you would have your vast self be and live eternally, and be proud of that, not proud of yourself, but proud of your vast self. Do you understand that what you do, especially as a loner being, is probably not what your life as a vast abiding self and being is about? What you do reveals what your life as a vast self might be like, but that is not what your vast self life is. These are the most significant beliefs, principles, and ways of abiding beings as they describe them. The rest are merely details, which we will present in detail later. Are you willing to live long and prosper by your own authority? Or would you rather forsake your vast abiding self and continue living as a loner being? In that, you are living at the level of animals digging your own grave. Is that what you truly desire? Life has greater promises than that for you. But the choice is yours to be and live or forsake. Are you willing to know and describe and live yourself and life only in these abiding ways? If so, life has much more to offer you, even greater promises than these for you. But the choice is yours to be and live or forsake. Isn't life grand? Don't rely on science to inform you about your abiding self, for science deals with forms and energy, with waves and particles, and with interaction, and speaks of beginnings and endings, but knows nothing about you, and cannot deal with intentions, motives, and desires. Yet, you today, as a sentient being, are driven by the emotional attractions and aspirations. And religion talks of sacred writing that tell of morals and the spirit of life, and of God's intentions and desires, yet cares very little about you, about forms, events, and energies that affect you, that you must respond to, or about unknown, unknowable matters you sense occurring all around you. Science is concerned with existence between beginnings and endings, yet knows nothing, and can know nothing of life before or after material existence, where all laws of physics break down. Religion speaks of life before and after existence, but knows very little that is real about today, or about how things really function. Science deals with your brain and consciousness, but knows nothing about mind. Religion speaks of mind and spirit and hasn't a clue what it is talking about, for mind, not God or spirit, is the source of you and the driving force of yourself and life. Since the basic assumptions of science and religion are essentially opposed to each other, science and religion cannot really be brought together to simplify and clarify matters, or to provide a more complete understanding of you in life. And together, science and religion are more perplexing than ever, for they disown each other. Beliefs, thoughts, feelings and desires are essential in your body and life today, but they have no place in the scientific world of matter and energy, or even in the world of only energy. And in this, science has no place for what is most important to you. Neither does religion or spirituality. Science has no place for free will, and though religion speaks of free will, it subordinates your free will to God's will. In the fundamental world of quantum physics, science speaks only of its uncertainty. And in religion, certainty only rests with God. Everything else is uncertain. Maybe this is the only point of agreement between science and religion. Religion talks a great deal about good and evil and moral issues, yet offers no real solution to life's pains, problems, and afflictions, while science has no place at all for good or evil, or for moral issues. Science deals with physics or physical matters, while religion deals with morals or spiritual matters, with a nod to ethics. What you need is an abiding realization that deals with mind, the foundation of all things, especially of yourself and life. All worldly events are random reactions, meaning without intention, which enables you to live by your own authority and determine your own destiny. But science has nothing to say about this. While religion puts part of your destiny in your hands based on faith and obedience, and leaves the rest up to the grace of God. The scientific description and explanation of the world around you presents a lot of presumed factual information ordered quite nicely to suit science, mathematics, and your language. But that reveals nothing at all about what drives you and concerns you most about your life. What matters to you doesn't really matter to science. And what matters to religion is what matters to God, not to you. Both science and religion pretend to answer your questions about life that concern you, but their answers are so weak and personally empty and unsatisfying that they are foolish at best, and they conceal or destroy the self and life you truly desire. Neither science nor religion, being trapped in beginnings and endings, can answer where you came from or what, if anything, is next. Isn't that of great interest to you? What does happen after death? Do you know? Is it a beginning or ending? If it is a beginning, what is it the beginning of? In the scientific view of the universe, all events occur and take care of themselves naturally without your help. And in the religious view of the universe, all events occur and are cared for by God. Where, in any of this, is there room for you? And unfortunately, philosophy and mysticism have nothing of significance to add. Neither science nor religion realize that a reactive universe faithfully transfiguring your every action actually lives everything you do as you do it. If you want to continue being awareful and abidingly alive as you claim you desire, you must live as the abiding being you truly desire being today so that the universe can live with you. And memory your being a particular abiding being for you to download. In ancient times, people prayed to causing gods and offered sacrificial gifts in an effort to cause their gods to bring about the conditions and results they desired. But you've moved far beyond such foolish actions, haven't you? Well, don't be too certain. Because in everything you do, you are still trying to cause what you want in life. You're just appealing to a different God. Does that make any real sense? You want a causing God to give you everlasting life, and you won't do much of anything to live as an abiding being. Actually, in this, you sacrifice the eternal self and life you say you want. Does it make any sense to continue in these ways? Maybe ancient religious people weren't so wrong after all. They were doing the right thing all wrong. Maybe, like you today, they should have realized the universe was just doing as they commanded. No prayer or offerings were necessary, and none are required today. As a concept of yourself in life, who you are doesn't really matter and probably doesn't even concern you very much. And it actually seems vital that you never know or limit yourself to being a who or what. What is important to you and probably to the universe and to life is what you do. For that alone defines and reveals you to others, and to yourself. If we told you who or what you are and nothing else, you wouldn't know anything about yourself or life. But if we told you about what you are doing, you wouldn't need to know anything else. Things do not act in a particular way because there is a law or rule of physics or nature that controls them, nor is divine guidance directing them. We create a law or rule or assume divine guidance because things function in a particular way. The same is true of you.
I have a question.
Okay.
You said before what I do is very important to me and the universe. Is that because the universe has done something to react to?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in that, you bring the universe alive.
Right. Yeah.
If it weren't for that, the universe would react to its own reactions until it reacted itself out and died and ended. The universe needs you to create new actions to keep the universe alive.
I see. Thank you.
Are there any more questions? I mean, what does that say to you guys? Let's have a little discussion here. Wow.
Discussion is overwhelming. Isn't it?
It's knocking me off my chair.
I thought that just sums it all up, and I don't really know what else to say about it.
Anybody else?
So the last thing I got from your answer is that I am actually very important for the universe. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So I mean individuals. Yeah, and me personally.
Everyone is.
Everyone is, yeah.
Does that make you angry?
No. No.
That everyone is important to the universe?
No.
Then you're not so extraordinary, are you? Everyone is.
Yes. that I realized at the beginning that maybe I think I'm ordinary, extraordinary, but actually I'm not.
Maybe you are. Does anybody want to deal with that with Simone? Patrick, do you want to deal with that with Simone?
Are you suggesting, you seem to set up opposings there. You're not extraordinary, but you are extraordinary. Did I hear that correctly?
I asked her a question.
Yeah.
Does it anger her that she's not extraordinary? Because everybody is extraordinary to the universe. That upset you, Patrick?
Oh, not at all.
But nobody can be extraordinary the way that Simone is extraordinary, and nobody can be extraordinary the way that Patrick is extraordinary.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Nobody can be ordinary or extraordinary as Simone or as Pat.
Yeah.
So in that, then, they are extraordinary in their own way.
Right. And that's the great thing in it.
Everyone's extraordinary, but they don't realize their own extraordinary because it's their ordinary.
That's right.
Exactly. Just Michelangelo example came to mind. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, my Asian back.
Or neck or whatever. Or my arm is really tired from holding it up all the time.
He was better shape working in the quarries.
Well, he liked doing statuary better than he liked painting. But he had a horse.
Are you referring to the story?
I am.
Oh, I had a horse, yes.
So, what is an emprise? Is an emprise your extraordinariness? Or like in the horse story, is it because you have an emprise that you do things the way you do things? And isn't that then extraordinary? And if that's true, then wouldn't showing people to their emprise be extraordinary? And wouldn't it be that just living your emprise would be your emprise?
Yes, I can imagine that.
Does anybody want to talk about emprise at all?
Well, emprise is something like an adventure, if I recall correctly. Like I look at it like the saga of my life that I choose to live. Then I have to admit, you know, I have to admit, I guess what I boils down to is I frequently tussle a bit with what an how to do an emperor, how to put an emprise in my life.
Well, it sounds like the emprise that you're talking about is loner body stuff.
Very well, could be. Okay.
So what might an emprise really be?
I know you guys have said it can be as simple as something like just a very simple thing. It doesn't have to be anything particularly complicated.
But what's the most important thing about it?
That you can't complete it in this lifetime.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes, all right.
Why do you suppose that is important?
Well, I think because it puts you in you put yourself in a context of acting beyond this lifetime and acting beyond this lifetime.
Continuing.
But the thing that you have to keep in mind, if it's something that can be completed in this lifetime, then you're really talking about loner body stuff. So if you're talking about just being on an adventure, well, you can do an adventure in this lifetime, then that's loner body stuff. It's got to be more than an adventure.
So is that a self, an eternal self-replicating you?
That an eternal self replicating me.
Yourself, yeah.
Do you guys understand that if you're living an eternal self, you can't know that? That to know that, you have to stand outside of being eternal in order to see and know eternal. So therefore,
body stuff.
An emprise helps you get outside of yourself.
In what way?
We'll answer your own question.
I guess it focuses me on a certain set of activities that are not self. It gets my focus off myself.
That's what I said. That's what it does.
All right.
It puts you on the focus on activities other than your ordinary self.
Oh, I see. It's a context for doing that keeps you focused on the doing and not questioning self, getting self-referential.
True.
And Patrick, do you want to take part of this? Karen?
I'm puzzling here a bit about any action is outside of myself, is it not? So then emprise is nothing unless it's acting. It's in action. Then if I've understood this correctly, then that is outside of myself. And then can I then experience myself as that action?
But the action and is if beyond I have, this lifetime.
Yeah, if I have chosen an emprise that cannot be completed in this lifetime and I am actioning that emprise, am I not then extending myself outside this lifetime?
So you're able
yes.
to get outside of yourself to see yourself and know yourself.
But the question is that I'm getting outside of myself by acting, and I see my action and I know myself. Is that not correct?
Can be. Now, the problem is, how does loner body come into this?
That always is. It lurks in the corner, doesn't it? I think we bring a few things together here, that as I am regenerating my body by living as I would be prepared to live eternally and have that action done unto me, I am regenerating my loner body, and according to what we heard earlier in this telephone call, then in that regeneration I am bringing myself to the vastness of myself, and then the emprise goes with that, does it not? That I think living as I truly desire doesn't have a hell of a lot to do with anything about whether I have hamburgers or pizza or sushi tonight. It has to do with how and as I'm living my life and as I'm living my emprise, don't those all come together?
Yeah, but what does all that mean?
Well, to me, it means that means I am living my vastness in living in that way. It's interesting that you've introduced the term the vast self rather than the abiding self, or it seems that in addition to the abiding self. But doesn't that mean that in living in that way, I am living and expressing my vast self?
But isn't that what you want?
Absolutely is what I want, yes.
But, like Andrew always says, but every time I say something, you tell me I'm only talking from my loner body self. And if I do anything, I'm only acting from my loner body self. Let's assume that I keep saying that.
Well, Andrew, I've heard that too about me, so I don't think you're alone. I think and you will continue to say that, and I think that you continue to challenge, and that's a very important part of how you are alive, and that the challenge is well placed, it's well taken, and it reminds me that. What's that?
You keep calling something a challenge, and I don't know what you're referring to as a challenge.
Oh, challenge! That when you point out to me that what's coming out of my mouth or what I'm living is nothing more than that of a reactive animal. That's a bit of a challenge. That's what I mean by challenge. It challenges the statements that I'm making, that it challenges me to consider the statements that I'm making and are they true, or am I BSing my way around?
But I wasn't challenging your statements. I was saying your statements are loner body statements and your doings are only loner body doings. How do I react to that?
Then since I take that as a challenge.
Why take it as a challenge?
Why are you judging it?
Well, I don't think it's a judgment.
Why not?
There's no judgment at all. I think that pointing something out isn't a judgment. I think all along that, Rogers even used, I think, if I remember correctly, Rogers used the term with me, that he thinks it's important to challenge people so that they don't stay stuck in where they've been living. I take it that when he points out to me that what's coming out of my mouth is likely loner body stuff, that's a challenge for me to consider what I'm doing. And it's a challenge, yeah. it's an offer. Do you want to take a look at what you're saying there, fella? Do you really mean what you're saying?
Then you didn't listen to what was said twice. You didn't hear.
I've been brought up on that too.
Wait, so what did you say twice, Raj? Because I missed that too.
Let's suppose you live your loner body empire. Let's suppose you lived your loner body vast self. All I've said before is, okay, but that's loner body, so what? That's not you. Now, if you like the challenge, take that challenge. That's not a challenge at all, but take it and deal with it. What is it?
What is it?
If you live your loner body's vast self, not you, you at least experience what it might be like were you to be living your own vast self. But that loner body vast self is not you. But
right. So, Raj, here's what I've picked up in the last 2 weeks. That,
Well,
hang on there. You never said it was wrong, but the tone and the progression of that conversation is that those actions, to me anyway, it sounds like, well, then those actions are a waste of time because they're not me. So I'm going to finish my sentence real quick. But what I think I've picked up over the last 2 weeks is that, yeah, those are not me, but they are vitally important for making that, what you want to call it, transfiguration to actually my abiding self. Because it puts me in the mindset, the practice, the actioning of living in that vast way.
That's really interesting, Andrew. Thank you for that, because I've taken it as a criticism that, there you are, you're just a chicken. You're talking big stuff, but you're just a chicken. And I've taken it as criticism.
Right. So that, well, basically, Pat, came out on a Sunday conversation I had with Roger where, I don't know, somehow we stumbled on that again, and he said, I never said that was wrong, and then we got into this thing where, and I don't know if Roger's going to agree with me tonight, but that's what I took away from it. Like, holy shit. I mean, I can call you up on Sunday, and I can be doing those. I can talk to you about being, second becoming, and it's loner, and that's maybe the best thing I can do right now. I don't know, but that's what I took from it.
But
other than that, I'm only living normal loner body stuff, waiting to someday regenerate a body so that then I can have these doings and experiences that are me. It didn't leave me anywhere.
Yeah, it was kind of a useless exercise. It seems that we're just stuck in lower body. What the hell can we do about it? So what the suggestion now is that that's, I hate that you even use the term, where I had a word here a second ago. It's a gateway. It's showing us what it can be like, and we can do more of it. Is that what we're talking about now?
Aren't we? But many people think, no, I'm not living my loner self. I'm living my true self, my vast self.
Right.
And that's where I...
And that's very self-defeating to think that.
Don't assume that's the case. You still may be living only your vast loner self. That isn't wrong to do that, because it allows you to experience what it might be like were you to be living your own vast self.
Well, Raj, just once for me, it's one step more than just give me an experience of what it might be like. For me, it puts me in the practice of actioning and thinking and living my life in those ways. So that I guess I have a running start on my abiding self in life.
That's
the
right.
Loner gives, in fact, is if I understand it, that's the whole purpose of the loner body self in life in the first place.
What we said in here was you can't change your behaviors from loner to vast or from personal to vast.
Oh, okay.
You can't change your reactions from one to the other. But you can change your body. And if you change your body, that changes yourself.
Right. Right.
So I've had many people say, oh, I had an experience and I did this, therefore I'm living my true self, my true vast self. That may not be, is probably not so.
Right. What it was an experience of living my loner
self. So all I was questioning is, don't think in those terms. You're still only living a false self, no matter how vast you may think it is.
Hey, Raj, since I don't ever know abiding when I'm living it, would there ever be a point in time at which I would be aware that something has changed?
Said what?
I think you said about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes ago that, you, like when we were talking about emprise, you said, like living your abiding self, you never know it. So I'm just wondering, would there ever be a point in time at which I'm aware of that something has changed?
If you're never having any discontent.
What does it matter? If the actions, your actions and the responses in your life from the world, the universe, are different, what does it matter?
Well, in point of fact, I guess I like what you've questioned here. I don't know that it does matter. The only matter would be that when I've, like, when we've had these conversations and you pointed out you're only living, but that's not you, you're only living your loner self. I just wondered if I would ever know, oh, I am living me now.
Well, if you look at your life and you can say, I see no discontent anywhere, then what are you living?
Oh.
See no what?
Cool.
Discontent.
That's your checklist right there.
Mm-hmm. So.
So the measurement of discontent? Yeah.
Well, if there's discontent, when there's discontent, then you're not living the abiding self.
And we're not talking about being content. We're talking about not being discontent.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for getting me through that part.
Yeah. That's super. Thank you. I think I want to mention something here. That given what I... just a few moments ago held as a criticism that I'm just a loner self trying to pretend I'm something else. That taking it that way has been a real barrier in talking to other people about forever living and what it could mean in their lives. Because I was thinking, well, who the hell am I to be able to talk to anybody about it if I'm just stuck here as a loner and I'm only doing loner body stuff? What am I telling anybody else then? And that was a real barrier for me.
Did you hear in all of this where the word emprise switched from a noun to a verb?
Yes, I did.
You did? I missed that.
I didn't know either.
In other words, it goes in there, you can regenerate your body to an abiding being, or you can emprise yourself to an abiding being.
You must act your emprise.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Absolutely. That's the key to everything.
Mm-hmm. Because like earlier here with Simone speaking, the universe doesn't speak your language. It only reacts to your actions. Mm-hmm. So you must action your mm-hmm. emprise.
Oh, I see.
So I can be emprising, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. The fact is, if you really get down to understanding this, you would find that an emprise actually works exactly as entanglement.
Exactly as entanglement.
Yeah. So you can read books on entanglement and realize that your emprise functions in the same way.
If I understand entanglement, the statement has been that you affect one particle and the other is simultaneously affected.
Meaning that if you affect the emprise, you are affected, or if we affect you, that affects the emprise. That's part of it, yes.
That's kind of cool. I can see that, sure.
But it also permits, and when we talked about the holographic universe, your emprise is your encode key.
Yep.
It is also your decode key.
Yep. So emprise is like it puts you in the way of that way of actioning.
That's right.
Okay. Oh, now I see what you were saying earlier, but I can be more self-aware because it's more, I decided my emprise. I know in that regard, at least as far as my decision, what I'm about, what I'm doing.
That's why you're a privileged being.
Did you hear the part of there about hearing space?
I'm sorry, I got on like about 6:30, so if you said something earlier, I missed that.
I didn't hear what you just said, Roger.
I said, do you understand the nature of hearing space?
Hearing space, no, I
or
don't
seeing
know
sound.
Oh.
That's right. You mentioned that of being able to operate more than one sense at the same time.
Yes, we did.
No, I don't know. Understand the significance of hearing space.
You don't understand that?
No.
Can you see space?
I think so. Oh, yeah, I think so. I can perceive
depth. Can you hear
depth.
Space?
No, okay. Oh.
See space.
I
can't see space.
Well, you can by the relationship of two items.
Yeah, I perceive depth or difference, and I have
relationship
space.
Defines.
So it's relationship that there is. I don't see space. I see that there must be something between here and there. But I don't. That there's a relationship between the positions of things. But do I really see space?
So are you referring to like the guy that's blind and walks down the road and makes those clicking sounds and he can hear space by the clicking sounds?
Are you asking Roger?
I am, but he's not answering me.
I'm asking you, guy. I know what it means.
Raj, insofar as that they call the Doppler effect, like a car coming gets louder and then goes and gets softer, I hear that. Maybe in that regard, I hear space.
You what?
Like a car approaching gets is softer and gets louder, and then it passes me and it gets softer again. In that regard,
no, that's I just hear hearing the sound.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. There is a difference.
I'm making a sound.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hearing space is hearing what is written.
And you say hearing space, hearing is hearing what is written?
Yeah.
Like making something visual out of that? What you read?
No.
So, like seeing sounds is...
Patrick, let's assume for a moment you would live your empire or as an abiding being because you would want to have all the wisdom of the universe.
Okay, we'll assume that.
Could you imagine that the wisdom of the universe is written in space?
His memory?
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And therefore, space in the universe is memory. And what you're hearing is what is written in space as memory.
That I understand.
Ah, yes, I can understand that too.
Mm-hmm. In other words, space is not a nothingness, it is a somethingness.
So, and that's not accessible in the absence of an emprise.
It's not accessible under the normal use of senses.
Yeah, okay, yes, that's correct.
So is also true listening hearing space?
You mean true listening?
Uh-huh.
Is true listening hearing space?
That's right.
Okay.
True listening is hearing space. Hearing the memory of space. Having the memory of space speak to you.
No.
I'm just suggesting that those are ways in which you can know whether or understand whether you are living your abiding vast self or kidding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Those are certain attributes. If you can't see sound, then you've limited each sense to a specific duty.
Mm.
Hear hearing, see seeing, taste.
Mm.
Many people can taste sound.
That I can do.
Oh, no kidding.
Or see the colors of sound.
I can do that sometimes.
Me too, yes.
I taste sound, and I can tell you what various tastes, what frequency of sound various tastes are.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I choose what I want to eat, what it sounds like.
Ah, you mean like that sounds good? Come on.
You know, sometimes I like low note for low octave notes for something to eat, and other times I'd like to have that combined with some high octave notes.
I'm just suggesting that then shows that whether it's loner or truly you are living outside of your normal personal loner self.
Aha, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That's a really good measure.
It's not the measure or the only, because it's
but a measure
in your life today. It's anesthesiology is the word, if I recall.
Anesthesiology.
Anesthesiology?
Being able to do that is called anesthesiology.
I know that term, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So does anybody have anything else to add?
There was some research with DNA recently in Russia where the DNA of a frog made a sound which they recorded, and then they played it for a salamander that was developing, and it became a frog, developed into a frog. I don't know if that's related, but it
sounds all right.
It was amazing to me that DNA makes a sound.
Everything in the universe makes a wave, acoustic wave. It makes a sound.
Yeah?
You can hear it.
It's amazing. So can you read the emprise from the accomplishments that you're proud of?
But you got to make sure that it's proud of the thing and not proud of yourself.
Right. Okay.
The doing is
important. But an emprise is not a verb, is it?
An emprise is not, but any noun can be used as a verb.
Right, but the emprise as a noun, what we come up with from the accomplishment, it's not the same thing as the verbs we used to come up with for the eternal self or the abiding
self. It'll
still
give you the
same answer. Same
answer? You just convert it to a verb, that's all. Because your actions are what describe, so you convert it to a verb, not meaning it as a noun. Then the verb describes the action, and the actions in that regard then are more revealing of yourself.
What was that last thing you said? A dealing of yourself?
Revealing.
Oh, sorry. I'm having trouble hearing Roger. Revealing yourself. So now the whole sentence again was... I forgot the noun of that sentence. The emprise is revealing? Which
but
was revealing?
The action is more revealing
action.
Of yourself.
The actions are revealing. The emprise.
But the emprising
Emprising.
In other words, not what you're living, but how you're living it, what you're doing. How you're doing it. That's more revealing than just the what you're doing.
And that is your emprising?
You said you were questioning using emprise as a verb. I'm saying that as a verb, it reveals more than it does as a noun.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because we're only made up of action or motion, right? Correct?
Well, not
exactly. Is that correct? We're only made up of motion or actions? Motion, basically.
I merely said in the thing there that your actions are more revealing than who or what you are. So in the same sentence, or in the same way, the action of the emprising is more revealing than the emprise itself as a noun. It's more revealing as a verb.
Yeah, that makes sense, because from what I understood, you said a year ago or so, since we're made up of motion, then we're all action, really. So the nouns are almost irrelevant. Once you become a noun, stop the motion in a sense, so back to action. Is that fair to say something like that? Well, it just seems important to know your emprising. I agree, it sounds right.
Because you're
right.
Converting it to an understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Got it.
So the six things can reveal your eternal self, but in the same way they reveal your emprising.
Oh, good. And we began tonight with imaginative minding. Could we talk about that now in relation to the emprise, would you, please?
You tell me. You limit your imaginative minding to language. Most people do.
Uh-huh. Because it's judging, mostly, right?
No, it's just because you limit it to languaging. You don't understand what you're talking about.
You don't know how to get outside of language.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so could you tell me again what you said, imaginative minding? How you described imaginative minding?
You're creating
Misty
images.
Or Roger?
You're creating and living by images, by imagination.
Hello?
He answered. Did you not hear?
No.
You're creating images.
Uh-huh. So describing images is imaginative minding. And so how does that relate to the emprise, because it's creative? Because it has motion? Is there a relationship?
And,
hello?
I'm reluctant to answer you because you always add something to the sentence or to the question that could be very misleading.
Oh, sorry. I'm obviously...
I'm just telling you why I'm reluctant to answer you yes or no. Because you give me dirty questions. You don't give me plain, simple questions. They're always...
They're loaded.
Mixed up, loaded.
Yeah. Well, I'm just... Yeah, I was trying to understand...
Stop loading your questions.
Okay. Imaginative minding.
creating images or concepts, and then describe whatever it is you're talking about, and then describing those concepts. We normally don't do that. What you do is you use language according to the structure of language, and you don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Right.
If you're talking about something, tell me what it is you're talking about, the image. Describe the image that you have that you're talking about.
So would an emprise be an image?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Ah. So then you do imaginative minding of your emprise. You
what?
You can describe your emprise. You can describe an image of your emprise.
Yes.
Instead of...
You can't tell me anything about...
Ah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Have to think about that. That's interesting. I'll have to try it.
So did anybody like the way tonight was written or object to it or don't give a damn or anything?
No, I liked it so much that I've already sent an email to Misty saying, asking if, given the ease with which she was able to read it this week, it perhaps is in keystroked form. If it is, I'd love a copy.
It is in keystroke form, but it needs some editing still.
So anyway, if the time or the interest is there, I would appreciate a copy.
Me too.
Me two, me three.
Me two.
Four. Yeah.
Me three.
Five.
No, I liked it. It created a very vast context within which that a number of things ended up being discussed. Mm-hmm. Although it need a little prodding to get the conversation going, but once it got going, it's been very, very fruitful. But that one other comment, though, I don't know where you're sitting, Roger, but it's you're further away from the microphone than Misty.
That's true.
Yep. And it's been hard to hear him.
Well, he's not real energetic in his speech to start with.
Okay.
Get that microphone closer then.
Then I have to sit up. I don't know.
That makes sense.
Exactly. He wants to sit over there slouching.
Well, Misty, if he's slouching, maybe you can just move the phone on top of him and you can sit next to him.
that has an image to it.
Yeah, there you go.
Gotcha. I'd love to hear an image of how an emprise acts as entanglement. Is there an image you could give us of that?
Well, what he told you to do was to take any book that talks about entanglement and put in the word to replace that with emprise, and there you go.
Okay, I missed that. Thank you.
As you affect your emprise affects you.
The emprise is known instantly as we live it. Yeah? Throughout the universe, somehow. Throughout our meetings, what we've met. Knows our emprise as we live it.
Are you willing to consider that your emprise is your soul?
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Are you willing to consider that your embryo is your eternal identity?
Yes and yes.
Yeah.
Are you willing to consider that encoding your eternal identity into the memory space of the universe enables you at a later time to download that?
Yeah, it's Raj. You said hearing. Yeah, you said earlier like hearing space is hearing what's written. So an emprise is me writing my identity into the universe.
Right,
that's
you're memorying.
That's what you're doing. You're writing that identity into the universe and then hearing it back.
Mm-hmm. And then it is
you're
memory.
Making a mark. Yes.
YED.
Right. And that's done by each action.
That's
so
right.
Each moment is a vital part of what you're writing into the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you would understand it by drawing a word picture or a picture and remembering that as the universe, then it's easier to hear that picture.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
You don't get
right?
lost in you don't get lost in language.
Right.
Hearing pictures.
Yeah, because, I mean, personally, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but whenever I've done a past life reading, it's a flow and series of pictures and senses and information, and it seems like it's...
Andrew?
Yeah?
That's why I said, you write me a booklet about the judge at his come again or begin again probation.
Probation, right.
And everything you say in that booklet about that is the same as your second becoming. And you could, in writing that, you'd find yourself listening to your second becoming. And you, as an emprise, then, you could hear that and recall that. And that would be your eternal identity. Second becoming is your, or begin again, probation in that, in the same way. So concepting that is merely picturing it, imaging it, and then describing the image you have of that. And it is... The closer detail you give it, the more accurately you will understand it.
Okay.
But then that's memoried into the universe, and the universe has it available for you to download at any time.
Yeah.
All right. All you have to do is listen.
Hmm.
That's letting the universe in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And it's quite unexpected. I didn't realize that you saw that program as such a close match.
You what?
I didn't realize that program was such a...
What program?
I guess
the judge's program.
Uh-huh.
The judge's program.
I think he's talking about...
The what program?
Yeah.
The judge's program was such a close match, is what he said.
Of course it is. It's a line-by-line, word-for-word match to you. To you.
All right.
In every regard.
Thank you for pointing that out. I definitely will go back and.
So here you have a chance to do that, and you even get paid for it.
Yeah, amazing. Well, now that I saw for sure.
But I mean, you're then doing it yourself. You're writing the judge stuff, of course, in that regard, but you are writing yourself.
Sure, because it'd be a pretty simple thing to simply just take that structure and move it over to what I want to talk about.
That's right.
Absolutely.
But
that's right. Get paid to do the work.
But then here we are. you just practice in concepting that is imaging.
Yeah. Neato.
So
are you writing a book, Andrew?
No.
Yeah.
He has the opportunity to do that in his job and get paid for it.
Cool.
Who'd have thunk it?
And allow that to be memoried into the wisdom of the universe.
I like the terms that we're talking about this in tonight, Raj. I know it's like you've been talking about this way for a while, but for some reason I'm hearing it all work real nicely together.
That's like letting the world in.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I guess we've said enough for tonight.
Oh, well, one question I just want to ask back to you guys. Is the format working for you two?
What?
Yes.
Is the format of tonight and the night, last previous Monday, is that working for you two? You've asked us, I'm just asking you.
It's a lot of work, but...
I already had this image. Problem is, does it help you?
Of course, we didn't have it finished until 45 minutes before the call.
Yay! Okay.
We were working
fresh.
Like mad on
freshly
it.
Freshly made, out of the oven. Out of the garden.
Okay.
Okay.
So thank you for the work. Yes, I like it.
Yeah, I hope we get a copy soon.
Okay. Good night for now.
Mm-hmm.